Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere and even earn money. We like that. All in one place for totally free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. And here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your cellular telephone or your computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else, those other places that podcasts are heard.
Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. And when you want to take conversations with your fans to the next level, Q&As and polls are the best way to get them talking. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free. Zero catch. We've been using it ever since we started How Long Gone. And ever since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like having the option of turning off the Q&As and the polls on the user dashboard has really helped boost my creativity and take it to another level. I highly recommend giving it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Oh, hey, what's up? It's me, Jason. How Long Gone podcast. It's Sunday, aka Monday. It's not one-on-one. At least I don't think it's going to be one-on-one yet.
Pray for us. Pray for us, fans, listeners, friends, foes, enemies. It's your boys. We're back. It's a beautiful day out, Jason. It's already fucking blasting sun. I've been up since 6 a.m. I did an 8 a.m. hot yoga class. How's your Sunday going?
I woke up at 4:45 a.m.
Wow.
And couldn't go back to sleep.
Oh, I thought you were just in your CEO swag, but unfortunately it was sleep deprivation.
No, not CEO swag. It was more of uncomfortable, unable to sleep, a little restless, and then just couldn't go back to sleep. And I went to bed really early yesterday. Day drinking will do that to you. Thanks to everyone who came out to our activation at Burger Lords.
Yeah, Jason did leave a little, he was a little pissy in the whip on the way home, I could tell.
Yeah, when you leave the club at 4:49 p.m.
P.M. Just to be clear, it ain't the sunrise
PM,
set.
Not
it
A.M.
It's the sunset set.
P.M. Yeah, Carolyn and I, we are like, we come home, we're like, oh, damn, like, I guess, whatever, let's just like order some Postmates. We got some Joy in Highland Park. You know, I'm eating a little bit of the leftover Dan Dan noodles right now. You know, ate some Joy. And then it was just like finished eating. Like, well, I guess this is it for the day. And I look out the window. It's like bursting sunlight still. Like, like
bursting sunlight is a really funny way to put
it. I mean, it looked like noon on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, it was like 78 degrees and bright as fuck. And I'm like, this is nighttime now. And then that was about it. But like when we played tennis a couple days ago, I was coming into it hungover, unstretched, unwarmed out. And my knee has been hurting ever since then again. So
not bad, bad though.
It's not bad, bad. But because of that, it's really uncomfortable for me to sleep and lay down and stuff like that. So when I'm just like chilling on the couch, booling, watching Downton Abbey, I'm like constantly like shifting my leg, like, oh, I guess I should put it here and then like elevate it, move it down. Do I bend it? Do I straighten it out? It's like, and when I'm trying to sleep, it's the same thing. It's just like, I'm always like uncomfortable. So it's affecting my overall life. But I did go to Equinox today. I literally came home 4 minutes ago and I was able to complete my whole workout. And
okay, so you're okay. We're not in the red.
No, we're not in the red. But what I've learned is like for the at least the immediate future, it's like a no days off rehab kind of thing. I can't just like chill for a couple days.
Yeah.
I have to like stretch it intensely every single day.
Yeah, bro, let's get it. I would love to stretch with you, King.
But, I mean, otherwise, I'm good. I'm not hungover.
That's good. Well, that's what, I mean, if you drink that early, I would hope you wouldn't be hungover, but I don't really know how that works at this point.
No, it's been a little while for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I picked up some new weed. It's called Feria, which I guess is kind of a Mexican-Spanish slang for money.
Ooh, I like that.
The jar of sticky is covered with some type of Latinx street art involving spray paint and dollar bills, and I'm sure instead of George Washington on there, there's like a sick ass clown wearing a gas mask instead.
Did this artwork, is this why you bought it, or is this...
No. If I knew what the artwork was going to be, I would have not bought it. At my local dispensary, they just have it in like glass jars, and it just says like the name and the price tag, and then it, like, if it's an indica or a sativa or a hybrid, and they're like, this one is 29.8% THC, and that's why it costs this much. But it's so weird, when I was there, like, all the, there's like, they have it separated into the mid, the reggie, and the exotics, like the high dollar shit. So you can get,
is that like the same old... way? Yeah, this, I know how that goes, bro. That's kind of a whips look. That's how, I know how that is. That's exactly
yeah,
how
you got C class, you got E class, you got S class, you got the 328i, you got the 540, you got the M5, you know.
Yeah.
There's levels to it, and as the weed price increases,
yes,
the branding gets worse and worse. So like,
interesting.
Old Pal marijuana, you know, Old Pal, you've seen it before.
Yes,
they have. They have like a Silicon Valley investment behind it, probably. You know, it's like designed by some agency in Venice or some shit. Like, the packaging is very well done. They probably have a website that costs $300,000. It's a whole thing. An eighth of that weed is like $19 or something like that. It's just like dirt cheap, and it's low quality weed. But you know, if it gets a job done, the mid range.
But that's the point, right?
Yeah, that's the point. That's the point. But then as you go higher, and you get into the, you know, the runts and the Skittles and the quote unquote exotics. You know, where it's like $70 eighths, $80 eighths, $90 eighths. Like, that's expensive ass weed.
Bro, a $90 eighth, you better be getting... I better have to go to the hospital. $90 eighth? You better drag me out of here, bro. That's insane.
Bro, it's so expensive. And then these are all, like, all the weeds that you hear about on the songs. If you listen to How Long Gone Radio, you can hear about all these weeds. But it's like the Skittles and the runts, and it's just like... a cartoon drawing of like the Flintstones on it. It's like a cartoon drawing of the Flintstones. Like, there's better packaging on like a bag of ecstasy or a bag of heroin that you see on the street. And it's just like, instead, you know, and Fred Flintstone, his eyes are very red. And instead of holding like a wooden stick that or a club of something,
he's got a blunt.
It's a stinky hog leg. And like, yeah, that is just straight up like, oh, that's 80. That's 80 for the eighth. You know what I'm
saying?
Have
you smoked that loudest pack? And
no.
Because this is something that I find, I mean, it's like anything else, though. It's purely like marketing and branding. You know what I mean? It's like
purely marketing.
I think there are levels to weed, but I think, like you said, it's basically like Reggie mid exotic. There's beyond that. There's not yeah. much. Like beyond it's, that, yeah. It's not going to get too much more nuanced.
The polarizing classic or trash scale applies to marijuana as well. There is no spectrum. It is just exotic or whatever, and the irony is there's nothing exotic about it. It's all just grown in like a Riverside warehouse. It's all just the same weed from the same places, and there's a little bit of nuance and things like that, but nobody's just like, oh, I invented this new weed and I want to call it strawberry Skittles, you know. It's just like, oh, that's like OG Kush mixed with blah blah blah, you know. And then they, you know, we're talking too much about weed.
Well, I mean, sorry, this is what you're into, bro.
But I wanted to get into that because at the local dispensary, coming up soon, they're kind of doing a pre-rollout, but the Za Olympics are coming.
I got that Zaza.
Yeah, so they take the word Zaza, the Zaza, and they combine it with the Olympics, and you get Za Olympics. I asked the security guard who has a gun on him at all times and a bulletproof vest who watches, you know, basketball or football games on his phone while he manages the store, manages the safety of all the employees. And I'm like, bro, what's the Za Olympics? And he's like, just go in, get your weed, come out, because it's going to take a while to explain. And I was like, oh, this is bad. I don't want this.
He said, what's up, big fella? How much time you got, big fella?
All right, string bean, what you, you know, I just want him to be like, I'm making small talk with you. And he's like, oh, the Olympics, what do you think it is, bro? It's like the Olympics of weed. That's all you need to know. But he's like telling me,
should we go cover this live?
I think so. So you pay money to enter the so it's a people's choice.
Like growers.
Yeah, well, I kind of deduced it to be a people's choice award mixed with like an Oscar type of thing. So they nominate, like, here's like the 10 best strains or growers, And those people bring their prized hog to the stable. They're like, this is our thing that we've been working on.
Sure, it's like when a pig gets a medal at the fair.
Exactly. But the differentiation on it is it's not judged by a panel of experts. It's judged by anyone who wants to enter. You pay money. I don't know how much money you pay. You pay whatever, $50 or something, and they probably give you a nug or whatever, a gram of each one, and then you go home and you're able to smoke it, enjoy it on your own, blah blah blah. And then everyone votes, and then if you pay money and you enter, then you get invited to kind of the awards ceremony showdown, which probably has some dank ass food trucks.
Okay, we need to,
you know, some bad DJs and all that stuff.
We need to get the, first of all, we need to get you as your manager. I will get you that gig as the DJ. But secondly, I think we should maybe receive press passes for an event like this. This is kind of in our zone of what we should cover. Much like when Emily Oberg used to cover, you know, sneaker drops for Complex. This is kind of that for us, I would say.
I'm dubious whether or not the Za Olympics has a big, you know, press marketing PR outreach. I don't even know if press pass is a phrase that they are familiar with.
Sure. Yes.
So you never know. I mean, if it's just like, hey, I'm, you know, Chris and Jason, we're here from High Times. We want to kind of cover it. You know, it could be a cover story. I don't know. You know, I can't make those promises.
I think the word pass to them means something different, if you know what I'm saying. but maybe we could educate them. But I mean, I'm interested. I would hit the Za Olympics with you, bro. No question.
Okay.
I'll have to wear a gas mask, of course, to avoid secondhand smoke. Just to be clear,
the only time Chris Black's going to wear a mask.
Exactly. The only time I'm wearing a mask is to avoid getting secondhand high at the Za Olympics because that's what I would do for that's what I do for How Long Gone. I leave it all on the fucking field. Mm-hmm.
We can't risk you getting contact high at the Za Olympics. This whole empire will crumble.
It's true. It honestly could affect all of our bank accounts, and that's all we care about.
You get back on the runs. Oh no.
Oh no.
No, Poppy.
Yeah, yesterday was fun. I got a lot of sun yesterday, which is nice. I'm looking a little more tan. I think I shocked Fred though, because I you know, he offered me a goner meal, of course, and I said no, I brought my lunch, and then showed him a gallon jug of water.
Produced a gallon of 365 water. Yeah.
A gallon of 365 water, and of course a Go Macro Protein Pleasure bar, my favorite, my go-to bar.
What flavor go do you go?
Protein Pleasure.
Protein Pleasure. Okay, can you use some other words that might describe what it tastes like other than protein?
Peanut butter, chocolate chip.
Okay. Peanut butter, chocolate chip. You're a simple man.
I'm a simple guy. And then because of course we sold out of our coffee, I had to go down the street to a coffee place. And I guess I went to the wrong one because I'm in fucking Highland Park. So everything looks the same to me. It's ugly. And I went to a place. I get a coffee from a fucking place called, it has like a really dramatic name that's two words. Like I couldn't believe it.
No, it was like with a K or something like that.
But it was like and consequences or something. It had this insane name.
It wasn't Truth and Consequences, was it?
No, but it's like that. I mean, I was trying to get. Oh, I'm sorry. Big shout out to Kindness and Mischief, the worst coffee place I've ever heard of.
Kindness and Mischief?
Dead ass. That's what this place is called, bro. Kindness and Mischief. What does that have to do with coffee?
I want neither of those things in a coffee shop. I don't want kindness or mischief. I want a lesbian who's mad at me to pour me a cup of something real angry and keep it pushing.
It was insane. But the coffee, I mean, look, it wasn't bad. But so I was just, I didn't know what the name was. Sure. And then I got the, you know, I paid with my, I got like an email from Square for my purchase. I was like, Kindness and Mischief, what the fuck is this? It sounds like a kid's clothing store.
Or some type of like, you know, non-binary sex shop. Two P's and an E.
Oh, I see. Yeah, when it's two P's and an E, it does hit. Yeah,
you dig.
It does hit different. But I think we're making a big trip to Beverly Hills later to drop my Rimois off for service.
Who's we?
Me, Al.
Oh, okay. That's good. So this is going to be a big Sunday. You're going to go drop off the Rimmy for service. Is there something wrong with it, or is this just a scheduled maintenance?
No, I mean, it's just that there's the one of the wheel casings is having a problem. It's not rolling properly. This is on my big dog, though, which I haven't been using lately. So now is a good time to kind of get it situated.
The failing Rimrod, it isn't what it used to be.
Well, this shit is from the 90s, bro, or early 2000s. Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we got Max from Eve 6. He's here on the pod. We're ready to chat, and let's give him a Zoom. Are you ready, Chris?
Yeah, let's call him, because I'm going to confront Max about his ghosting us the other day, and he better be able to answer. We ain't making eye contact, but it should feel like eye contact. Hey there, overwhelmed foodies. Are you drowning in a sea of meal kit options, feeling like you're in a bad dating game where every contestant looks the same? Fear not, because amidst the chaos, there's one shining star worth your culinary affection. Home Chef is not just another fish in the meal kit sea. They're the gourmet catch that you've been dreaming of. Say goodbye to swiping left on lackluster meals and swipe right for the one brand that will make your taste buds swoon.
Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef design recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, I like to chop myself, or quick microwave meals that are assembled in minutes, Home Chef has you and your entire family covered for delicious meals, 30 options per week, and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. I'm keto now. Not only is it convenient, but it is also economical. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Mamma mia.
For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners, our listeners, 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/howlong. That's homechef.com/howlong for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. homechef.com/howlong. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. I compromise every day, Jason, as you know, because that's kind of part of being a good friend and partner.
Oh, wow.
I am forced to keep food in my refrigerator against my will because my wife demands it. But when it comes to your health, Jason, there's absolutely no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, or their crossword puzzles just because they're available right now, or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. I know you have sketchy insurance, Jason. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and most importantly, prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All these doctors are real, with verified reviews from actual patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists near you, or if you want to book one far away from you, that's your decision. Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Booking.com. Booking.yeah. From cozy bed and breakfast to trendy boutique hotels, with so many choices across the beautiful United States of America, you can book whoever you want to be. That can look like booking a 5-star hotel to indulge your luxury side, that's me, or booking a remote cabin in the woods to explore your adventurous side.
So spring has sprung, the sun is out, the sun is shining, I can't wait to get to New York. Check out Booking.com for your ideal hotel or vacation home, no matter where you go in the U.S.
Booking.yeah.
Book whoever you want to be on Booking.com. Booking.yeah.
Jason, summer's quickly approaching, and you know what I'm thinking about?
What's that, Chris?
Dying.
Okay.
I'm not prepared. I don't know if you are, but luckily the homies over at Policy Genius are making it very easy for me to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers all in one place. You can save 50% more on life insurance when you compare with Policy Genius, and you can save $1,300 or more per year. That's like a whole shirt.
That's a whole shirt.
Yeah, bro. I mean, I don't know what kind of, you're probably wearing cheap shit, but for me, $1,300, you know what I'm saying?
I look at $1,300, nice, I'm like, all right, how many cartons of American Spirits can I get for that? You know, if we're trying to die.
We're not a smoker, because that can increase our policy or a monthly policy, so we lie about that. But the licensed experts at Policy Genius, they work for fucking me. They don't work for the insurance companies. You can trust them to help you navigate every step of the shopping and buying process. That kind of service has earned our G's over at Policy Genius a motherfucking 5-star rating across reviews on websites like Trustpilot that I've never been to, and my favorite website, Google.com.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to get started on Policy Genius, it's not hard. It's actually pretty easy. You just go to policygenius.com, which is a great website you could find on Google, and then in just a couple of minutes, you will figure out how much life insurance you need. You know, do you got friends? You got family? Do you have people depending on you? Yes or no? I, of course, don't. And then when you're ready to apply, they will handle all the paperwork, all the scheduling, all that bullshit for free. They're never going to sell your information. Policy Genius is never going to sell your info, your data to any other third-party companies like some other shady places might. And they don't add any extra hidden fees at the end after you're ready to pull the trigger. So make sure you go to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Okay, Max, are you good?
I'm good. Yeah, hopefully my audio is okay. I'm doing this from a telephone. I don't own a computer.
Okay, Max, you sound great. Thank you for podding with us. You do sound great, despite the fact that this is not on a computer and you don't own a computer, right?
That's right.
Is that a personal issue you have with Steve Jobs, or is this just a choice you've made?
I don't know. It's no longer novel, and it's only like it only makes my life more difficult at this point. But I still have some sort of block about it. I don't know if you can figure it out. That'd be great.
Oh, we're gonna figure it out. When was the last time you owned a computer?
I got my first computer in 2006.
Wow, that's pretty late.
Yeah,
it's pretty late. And then,
you really are a '90s bro.
I really am.
You don't just talk about this shit; you live this shit.
That's right. I walk the walk.
Okay. So, 06 first computer. That's pretty late in the game. And you were probably just using it music stuff, studio shit, or just you're a gamer, jacking off, checking the weather?
No, like, I didn't really use it at all. I really just didn't.
It was a motherfucking paperweight.
I didn't use it. I mean, I felt like I should have one. Like, I'm a grown up now. I ought to get a computer. And I haven't missed having one, honestly, until recently. Like, but when I'm doing stuff like this and people want me to record, you know, local audio and stuff, and I'm like, can't help you.
I would assume, though, for like demoing and shit, like that's what a lot of musicians use computers for, right? Or do you just use your voice notes? Or do you not do demos? Or you just go in the booth and black out?
Yeah, I use voice memos right on a guitar, or more recently, I'm going into the studio with my partner in the band and listening to the tracks he's made, writing to them right away and recording the vocal right away, and that's that.
Hey man, I mean, if you don't need it, I mean, I'm pretty envious as hell. Your quality of life, until you became addicted to Twitter, your quality of life was probably so much better than everyone's, right?
Yeah, it may have been. It's definitely not now. I mean, yeah. It's not good.
It's been a wild couple months. It's not good.
My quality of life is 2 thumbs down, not good at the moment.
Let me tell you something, Max. From one Twitter power user to another,
yeah.
It's all we have, man. It's one of society's greatest tools, and I'm not going to let people slander it, especially Jason.
I'm kind of with you. You know,
you better be.
Yeah, that's really the sentiment. It's all we've got. You know, you know what else are you? What else are you going to do with this? Like, ancient dread, you know, like it's more productive than some other things is what I always say.
We haven't figured out what those things are yet.
I could list them for you, but I mean, I think we all have list fatigue too.
Are you from Cali, Max?
I grew up here. I moved out here the summer before I started sixth grade. I was born in New York City, but left when I was 4. And then lived in Miami, Florida until I came out here.
Shit, Max only lives in the best cities in America.
3 best cities in America.
That's fire.
I'm a cosmopolitan boy.
Where do you live in LA?
Most people know by now the story of my band, like getting signed really young and all that stuff. And
yeah,
basically going from being, you know, being in high school, living with our parents to being out on the road for a year and a half. And so basically when that tour was winding down, I was like, well, the last thing I want to do is live with my parents, you know, and we had high powered, you know, business management and stuff at the time who would end up actually actively defrauding me years later. But
Max, look, we you know, you can't ever give the guys all the passwords to the city national accounts, and I thought you knew that.
Yeah, it's funny because that's like literally what happened.
Sorry,
but anyway, yeah, so I you know, tasked them like any good rock star would do with finding me an apartment. You know, it's a business management firm in the Valley, you know, so they fucking picked an apartment in the Valley, and that's where I lived for the next couple years. And then a similar thing happened when I bought my home that I'm no longer in because I'm going through a divorce. Stop me if any of this is getting too predictable for you guys.
No, I'm loving all this.
Okay,
you're also talking to another guy who's sober and divorced. So you know, these are topics that we're able to cover.
Oh, you know what? Solidarity.
And I live in the Valley,
my brethren.
So you no longer, unfortunately, did you lose that house, or are you figuring it out now?
No, we're figuring it out. We're actually about to sell it. But again, that was I purchased it sight unseen. I was on tour.
Shit.
And my ex-girlfriend found it and like sent me a picture. I don't know how she sent me a picture. Maybe she didn't. I don't know. I don't remember. And I said, sure, let's get that one. And it ended up being like a fortuitous. Well, I guess I shouldn't say too much more about exactly where it's located, but
sure.
Well, I mean, since you don't live there anymore, can you drop the address?
Yeah, sure. It's
but it was a good investment. It ended up being a good investment, basically.
Yeah, it was a good investment and convenient for some reasons. And so, yeah, now I'm in a tiny little bungalow, you know, like conveniently placed between like my kids' schools and the place where my ex is staying.
This sounds like a lot. You got a lot going on, King.
You know, I got a lot of irons in the fire. I got a lot of rods in the pond, you know, so to speak. And
a fellow angler, love to hear it. Are you getting a lot of non-musical opportunities with your newfound cyber fame?
Not really.
You know, Instagram promo deals.
He's like fuck that? No.
No, I'm not. No, nothing. Nothing that has any material benefit to my life.
Would you like to?
Yeah, sure. I'm. You know, I'm open to all kinds of stuff.
You've only been a musician though, right? Your adult life.
Yeah, it's all I've ever done. Yeah, that's for sure. do you guys know Luke O'Neill? I feel like Luke knows everybody.
The writer Luke O'Neill.
Yeah.
Did he used to? I think he was on staff at Esquire, but he like lives in Boston.
He was. Yep. Yep. He and I are working on a little something with another guy named Dave Wedge. I don't know if it's gonna get picked up or anything like that, but yeah, just rocking. Mm-hmm.
I love it, man.
You guys go on tour. You've been touring the whole time too, right? Like you guys go every couple years.
Yeah, pretty much. There were a few years there where the band broke up. We started back up again. The band has basically functioned as like a live business for the last 10 or 12 years or so, you know, allows us to, you know, keep the lights on and all that. It wasn't until a couple of years ago, the original drummer left the band. Yeah. He's like a great guy and stuff. But it wasn't a good fit creatively for like a really, really long time.
Did he get a new band or did he switch careers completely?
Yeah, he's doing a new band. We don't really talk anymore. It's one of those things, you know?
Let's not give him any shine, Chris.
Yeah, not because he's awful or anything, just because it's...
There's just nothing to talk about.
There's nothing to talk about, you know? Sometimes there's just nothing to talk about. So when that happened and John and I, the guitar player, were sort of like reevaluating things and we're kind of like, well, let's just fucking make a dumb punk record. Let's just basically do what we want. Who cares?
Fuck it.
Like the guy in the band who was like extremely ambitious, even when there was like literally all the cosmic signs were saying, you fool, was gone. And so it's like, okay, let's just do this shit. And so we did, and it was just really fun. And that's the Grim Value EP that's coming out this month, which we made at the end of 2019. After we did that recording, the online stuff started happening. So it was like,
I like calling it the online stuff.
Yeah, the online stuff. Totally. It's that's like appropriate.
I mean, but what else do you call it?
Appropriately, like dismissive. It's just another any opportunity that we have to basically confuse and lean into what feels like the opposite of what a band of our whatever you want to call it milieu would do.
When you were a youngster in LA and you know, starting up the band and everything like that, what kind of stuff were you guys listening to? What shows were you going to? Like what kind of like scene, punk scenes and stuff like that were you guys doing?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was the 90s, so it wasn't like now when I feel like people are really do like everything, you know. Yes. It doesn't matter. Yes. What the genre is. Like when we were growing up, it was like you pick a fucking thing, you identify with it wholesale. You know, it started out as, you know, the typical like Epitaph fat thing.
Yep.
and then actually that's not true. It started out for me when I went to skateboarding camp and someone was playing Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death. That was my opening into punk rock. And then yeah, the obligatory Fat Records and all of that stuff. And then when I started to write songs, I found myself gravitating toward the bands that had compelling lyric and melody stuff going on, even if it was obscured by talentless playing and bad recordings and stuff like that.
Sure, 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 sure.
Okay, name some names, please, sir. Name some names.
Screeching Weasel. Still one of my favorites. And I told my girlfriend this all excitedly the other day, and she was like, "What?" The Mr. T Experience DM'd me.
Oh, shit, bro.
The Mr. T Experience.
Mr. T Experience DM'd me.
The Mr. T Experience DM'd me a couple days ago and was like, "Hey, Jughead from Screeching Weasel's trying to get a hold of you. He really wants you to come on his podcast."
God damn it.
For like an idiot like me who has never had to grow up. I mean, that's like that was a mountaintop moment.
Everybody really has a podcast. That's my takeaway from that.
Everyone.
We talk about that a lot on this show, how that it's like completely cool and acceptable for like, you know, grown men are, including ourselves, are like dissecting Olivia Rodrigo. Whereas in the 90s, we wouldn't even listen to that or give it a chance. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's not what we're into. I'm not going to listen to that. I'm not going to talk about it. That doesn't exist to me. It's corny.
Absolutely.
Might get beat up for even mentioning its existence.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I definitely also listened to the radio and would like sing along alone in my car to Everything Zen and the Placenta Falls to the Floor song and stuff like that. But I definitely wasn't I wasn't telling my friends about it.
Yeah.
You're talking about Bush?
Yeah, Bush and Live and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to say, that's funny you bring Live up, because that song came on at the gym the other day.
Not funny.
The big hit, like and I was like, man, this shit is a lot better than I remember it. Like, it's really a well-written song.
I completely agree, and it's also crazy how fucking heavy shit from the 90s sounds. Like, even stuff like that was like corporate radio rock or whatever, in the least charitable interpretation. But AB that with anything that's come out in the last couple years that wants to enjoy the mantle of rock in any sense. And it's like, it's fucking heavy. It's, you know, it's like,
even Live is heavy.
Live is heavy. The fucking Goo Goo Dolls are heavy now.
Now we're talking. Now I didn't want to jump right into it, but you know, they're between, look, the Lemonheads and Goo Goo Dolls are probably my two favorites. You know what I mean? From that.
I mean, the Lemonheads are legitimately one of my all-time fucking favorite bands.
My man, I knew you were a Dando head. I could tell.
Dude.
So did you guys play with Lemonheads or no?
Never played with the Lemonheads. Met him once at a Holiday Inn in Virginia Beach.
Oh, shit.
I was at the bar and I was like, "Hey, I'm a big fan." And he literally said, "No pleasantries, no thank you, no nothing like that." He just goes, "You got any drugs?"
My man. See, yeah. that's why he's because I have a lot of we've had we had this guy Wes from he was in a hardcore band called American Nightmare, but he's in a band called Cold Cave.
Oh yeah,
he told us a great Evan Dando story that's like kind of similar. Like he just didn't care, and then ended up his wife made him apologize after he was a dick, and then he ended up buying him a burrito, and they have these amazing photos together in a photo booth that night, like after he apologized.
That's great.
Yeah, but and my other friend tried like photographed him recently and like said it was like impossible. He like, you know, he lives in like, I think he lives in Martha's Vineyard. Very tough to pin down kind of guy. But the Goo Goo Dolls, I did a podcast about them, and I just don't think people understand their connection to like the Replacements and all of that.
Like, oh, dude, they're Replacements with like a shine on it.
Well, what happens is, and I mean, you can speak to this obviously much better than we can, but to me, it's like every band, I mean, starts out wanting to be cool and like wanting to be indie.
100%.
You know what I mean? Kind of like it's especially in that era, like it was when selling out was a real thing. But look, man, I mean, you know, when things start happening, you can, like I said, you can speak to this directly. You just kind of go with it because it's fun and there's money and it's cool.
100%.
Who's gonna take a stand against that?
It's like, honestly, it's honestly not any deeper than that. Like, I think I do think with our story, it was just a little different in that because we were literally remarkably unambitious because we were kids. So we, you know, there wasn't. And also there was such a ceiling on the music that we loved and listened to, you know, when the band formed. There hadn't been that whatever wave of punk breaking again yet. And it was like, oh, if we can get a job at a coffee shop and play in our little band and make our flyers, that would be fine. But put us in the studio for literally the first time, you know, with a producer who like knows what he's doing and wants to make a record that's going to get on the radio and stuff. And I wasn't pushing back on anything. I didn't have any ideas when it came to recording. It was a completely, you know, like, it was
push
just
the buttons, bro.
Yeah, it was like complete magic to me. I was just in awe of the shit. None of it made sense. And I was like, all right, you know, fucking, yeah, I'll play the bass and I'll sing the song. And then that's what it sounds like. So,
and in a month you give me a cool CD.
Yeah, and you give me a cool CD.
Yeah, I think that the low ambition thing is pretty funny because I do think that like that like slacker, you know, mentality, for lack of a better phrase, is completely erased.
Oh, it's gone. It is gone. Definitely the opposite of the modern artist. I mean, that, you know, and good for them. I guess they've learned finally the lessons of fucking history. But, you know, they're all careerists to a degree that is like so alien to me. Like younger artists and stuff now, like literally like hang out with their A&R guys. You know what I mean? Like like they want to and shit.
They do it electively.
Yeah, they choose it.
I remember when I was meeting my first A&R guy and I was just like, I was blown away. Like I truly could not believe it. I assume they've gotten cooler. But this guy literally had a goatee.
No.
Goatee, lived
they
in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Rode a Harley. Like it was exactly what you think it, like the worst it could be.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's in 24-year-old guy. I know what's good. You do not.
Dude.
Like that's just how it is.
The A&Rs are the same level of dorky as they always were, but at least back then they cared about and enjoyed music and wanted to tell other people about it. Now they just care about like Yeezys and like college football and, you know, cornhole and stuff like that.
Yeah, completely. It's
they just think music industry is sick and that's it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, bro culture.
It's a job. It's a job.
It's a job. And for all of the deserved slights that you could throw at the A&R guy of yore, as obnoxious and insufferable as they may have been, a greater proportion of them were music people who came from, whether they came from mixing or
they're in a band themselves a lot of the time, you know, a failed band, you know.
Right. Totally. All of that bluster and bravado and shit. It's like when I think back to the guy who really was responsible for breaking the first Steve Six record was the radio promo guy at RCA.
Of course. Those the guys are monsters. Those guys are monsters.
Dude, he was literally a monster. It was so hard for me to be around him because he was one of those people that was like, there's no way that I can match your level of, let's call it enthusiasm or something. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
he was like, this song is a number one rock song. And I, you know, he used the word I am going to take it there. And like, I'm going to take this to number one. And he said that before the song was even on the chart. And he fucking did, because he had a boxer's low addled ego.
I won't stop until you're at top of the pops.
Right.
Who was like number one the week before? Like, what was the vibe? I mean, I know the time period, but like, I think it would help us to know if you remember.
Yeah, we were bouncing into and out of the number one slot, being replaced by and then supplanting the Bare Naked Ladies 1 week. Like, just flip-flopping back and forth.
Big fucking song.
For like a long time. Yeah, big song.
Bad song, but big.
Bare Naked Ladies, though, seem like exactly the kind of guys I'm talking about, where it's like, yo, I don't know, man. We're making this kind of silly, like, bar music, and people really seem to care, so we're just going to go with it.
Totally. Like, and I think, like, they are the perfect example of... I was, of course, tweeting about this, too, recently. Like, I feel like, you know, I said something like songs that don't have at least a moment of kind of deep cringe in them are usually songs that no one really cares about, at least if you're talking about, you know, songs that have a shot, I guess, at the public consciousness. Like,
it needs that.
They kind of need that. And it is, in a way, easy to deride that stuff, but there's something honest about it. And the guilelessness to me points to kind of sincerity or something, that a song that maybe is objectively cooler, but is hiding behind layers of blasé or something. And 1 week by the Bare Naked Ladies was cringe from fucking note one, and it lived in cringe for those 3.5 minutes unapologetically. You know, hats off. Like,
I agree.
I respect it.
I know you've talked about this a lot, but, you know, I'm a big Third Eye Blind guy.
Yeah.
I think the first record is literally like a classic.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of weird personal connections to them. So I know how bad this guy is. Like,
yeah,
I've heard
yeah.
it firsthand yeah. all the time. But also, like, do you think it's like pure ego and that existed before the music? Because I think that's what happens with a lot of people. I think, like, you have that in you, and then you see success, and then it's just off to the races. I don't think it's from the success. I think it's there before.
Yeah. He's a pretty enigmatic figure to me. We toured with them. We did two back-to-back tours with them. So we were out with them for like a half a year or more. And there's so much dissonance there that it's really hard for me to know how much of it is performative, how much self-awareness is there. These are questions I don't have the answers to. Like, I think it's honestly hard for me to reconcile the fact that personality wrote those songs, because there's such a chasm between those two things. And I know there's like conspiracy theories out there, like maybe he didn't or something.
Oh, really?
I've heard tell
of like a producer, like a songwriter writing them, or like another member of the band that he fired.
Dude, like, I don't know if there's any credibility to any
this
of
is
this
all
stuff.
This is alleged. All speculative. This is all speculative.
This is all speculative.
Allegedly, of course.
This is very allegedly emphasis. Lots of emphasis on allegedly here. Because he is a famously fucking litigious guy. but yeah.
Well, don't worry. Chris would love to be sued by him.
Yeah, that's my kink.
That would be kind of sick, actually. I've heard rumors about the original guitar player from the band that he was in before, called Puck and Natty, having written those songs. Then I've also heard stories about their ex-manager, who he also sued, this guy Eric Gotland, who I remember, who was all around all the time and stuff, that he wrote lyrics.
What?
Yeah, which is really bizarre. So
Chris just got into conspiracy theories now.
All of a sudden. No. I just think that, I don't know, man. It's kind of insane, too, because I think that, like, that band has withstood a little. It's, like, kind of cool again. Not cool, necessarily, but it's, like, everyone I know kind of likes it and would say they like it, which I think there was a time where that wouldn't have happened.
He, because it's not they anymore.
Yes.
Kind of did the impossible, I think, because, okay, they had record one that had like six smash hits on it.
Literally six singles. Literally. It's crazy.
Yeah, that were fucking number ones. And then record two, which had, wait, did record two have the Never Let You Go song?
Yeah, yeah. Record two had three or four.
But was definitely a step down for commercial success from the first.
Yes.
And he also burned every fucking bridge. Like everyone that early on. I mean, everyone hated that guy. Like fucking people hated him. Radio hated him. Everyone hated him. But somehow he managed to resurrect it or something. I mean, I guess it is testament to the fact that they had as many fucking hits as they did. But
no, it's all music. I think it's literally all music. I think the songs are so good that people just don't care.
Yeah, I think that's it too. And they can still fucking play like massive rooms and shit.
Yeah, they tour a lot. I mean, they tour a lot, which I think. But I think all that stuff. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I think it's probably a good time for you guys. I mean, you guys will probably, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a tour and the whole thing. Are you trying to do this differently? Or would you do like a package thing with some guys from your era? Or are you trying not to do that?
We're definitely excited about opportunities to tour with, you know, unlikely packages. And we have some stuff that we're kind of talking about with that. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't have like delusions of grandeur about it. And I also, you know, there are also bands from our era that I genuinely fucking love, you know, their music and as people and stuff like that, and would be happy to go out with. So no hard and fast rules. We've definitely done those package tours, gotten lucky with a couple of them, with lineups that were great and some that were fucking terrible, and how it goes.
Welcome to the biz. Yeah, that really is how it goes.
Max, we talk a lot on this podcast about syncs.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And just in the last couple days, you were doing some tweeting about that stuff. We usually ask people, you know, what was the one sync that got away, or the one that you wish you said yes to, or something like that. But I think you may have already tweeted about it.
Oh yeah, I'm happy to. Well, I don't know if I'm happy to talk about it, but I will.
You're happy to entertain some people with your story of misery.
Yeah, exactly. I'm happy to make your listenership feel a little bit better about themselves right now.
God bless you.
I mean, yeah, the one that will, you know, haunt me forever was an offer from Mitsubishi to use not even the lyric, but the instrumental of a song from record one. And they offered us $500,000. And, you know, we had one of those, very serious, you know, interminable band meetings about it.
Three-piece band, right?
Three-piece band.
So that money's not getting whacked up too much, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really not. pretty good deal. Pretty good deal for everyone involved. and we decided, you know what? No, it's a sellout move. We're not going to do that. You know, we're artists. And so we turned it down. And then not 2 years later, we had drastically changed our tune. And, you know, and not only did we have our music featured in a 1-800-COLLECT commercial, we appeared in it. We offered our likenesses as well as our recording.
Uh-huh. And was that one also for $500,000?
No. Thanks for asking. No, it wasn't. No. I don't remember what it was for, which probably puts it in the, you know, I would say 20 and under K range, which is, hey, nothing to scoff at.
Yeah, I remember I saw you tweeting about that, and just you writing the words 1-800-COLLECT was a sobering, like, I was like, I have not heard those words in so long, and it just brought me back down to a whole other world and a whole other time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does the same. I mean, yeah, it just makes your own mortality just like smash into your face.
Did you guys do a bunch of MTV shit? Like, were you doing TRL and stuff, or was that, was this a little early for that?
Record one was early for that. Record two, the hit that we had off of that after putting out two rock songs that, you know, compared to record one were stiffs, put out a third single that went only to pop radio. And also went to TRL and became TRL hit.
Which song?
Here's to the Night.
Oh, yeah, that's a fucking, yeah, that, okay, that was like a big, that was, so they were, was that like a Hail Mary on the second record?
Yeah, it was like, okay, the, you know, this obviously isn't working at rock, and the landscape of rock radio at that time was like Limp Bizkit and Papa Roach, and we had made this like Duran Duran-y kind of very overtly pop rock melodic thing. So yeah, I was like, okay, well, maybe this will work at pop. And we were a TRL staple for that song, played live on TRL.
Hell yeah.
And also just went from playing festivals with Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit and literally walking off the stage like the faces dripping with blood from like having people throwing shit at us, just like hating the shit out of us.
No, you guys, no, come on.
Yeah, no, I swear to God, it was a festival in Phoenix. I shouldn't have pluralized it because it only happened once.
Well, Phoenix, okay, that makes a little more sense.
Nothing good happens in Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. No exception here. Yeah, they were throwing ice at us. I don't know how. They must have like gotten a hold of like bags of ice and were pelting us with ice and missing for the most part until they didn't and caught me right above the eye, and I felt the blood start to like trickle down my face and stuff. So we went from doing those festivals to then doing pop festivals with like the Baja Men and whatever like B-level Britney Spears that they, you know, labels were trying to push at the time.
Mandy Moore, something like that?
Probably. I don't even remember specifically. I just remember the, like, it was very fucking psychedelic. Mm-hmm.
Well, those radio shows are crazy. Like, especially if you have a song like that, I'm sure you did every jingle jam all over the country.
Yeah, totally. And that's basically payola, you know, that they get bands to play these festivals for free and they sort of guarantee you a certain amount of spins or whatever.
The label pays, basically. The label has to pay, you know, for your travel and shit, at least in my experience. I don't know. I mean, that's the other fucked up part. It's like the way labels have to pay for like tickets to like an award show. Like, people don't really realize that.
Well, right. But the label paying for it means you paying for it. You know,
you're paying for it.
All that shit's recoupable.
Eventually you're paying for it.
Yeah.
At some point you're going to be paying for it.
Exactly.
So what about in the 90s, did you experience any of like the 90s electronic music world? I know you're probably not a massive EDM fan, but, you know, Tangling with Moby or any people like that?
You know, in the last like 5 or 6 years, I've done a few of those things just because, you know, I need money. And a couple of them are really fucking funny. I featured on a Hardwell song, Hardwell Kill the Buzz, featuring Max Collins, and I sound like Bono on it. It's really fucking bad. And then
damn, so how does something like that go? I mean, I know who Hardwell is. He's like a,
how does that even,
he's
happen?
Like a huge European DJ guy that, you know, maybe not the coolest, but yeah, how does that even come across your desk?
It came through a friend of mine who had done a bunch of stuff in that world. And then another one that I did, I actually liked it. I did a song with this group called Pegboard Nerds, who are like one of those, you know, Scandinavian dubstep duos.
Sure.
And that came about because Don Gilmore, who produced the first couple of six records, was producing the Cruella record, and Pegboard Nerds were like ghosts producing on that. Mm-hmm. Told Don they needed different kind of top line guy, as they call it. I hate that fucking term. And so he brought it to me, and I was like, sure. And that song is fucking bizarre, and I actually kind of like it. But
do you write a lot now? I mean, are you doing a lot of that?
No, I'm really not. I mean, we've written a full-length Eve 6 record that's like ready to go after this EP comes out. I honestly kind of hate doing that shit for the most part. I mean, there's been some stuff that I've like gotten kind of lucky with or whatever, but I'm not particularly good at it. And I don't really enjoy the whole like LA co-write thing.
You're not asking your publisher to get you on those writing? I could see you and Benny Blanco building, you know what I mean, over an acoustic guitar and a hamburger.
Yeah, right, sure. No, I definitely said yes to a lot of that stuff. It's not like I was like really principled about it or something. I just...
Don't like it.
Don't like it. Wasn't good at it. Felt like a waste of time.
Sure. No, that's half of my life.
Now that you have a kind of a newfound audience and, you know, a lot of people find you very funny, are people approaching you about non-musical things like writing a book or like, you know, developing a show for the FX network or something like that?
This thing I'm doing with Luke is a book. It remains to be seen what, you know, what'll happen with that. No, I haven't gotten offers about
maybe not so much things that are happening, but maybe just like things that you would like to perhaps happen, you know, as you're it's not like you're going to be done making music anytime soon, but you know, eventually, is there like a second act that it doesn't involve music that you would like to do? Maybe like
I'm a very stereotypical like 90s rock guy in that I have zero entrepreneurial skill or bent, really.
How's your self-confidence level?
It's pretty high.
Okay.
That's all you need. I mean, that's really all you need.
Yeah. I am talking with a friend of mine who, in my opinion, is like the best poster on the site. Her name's AutoGynophiles on Twitter, at AutoGynophiles. She is very, very funny. We're talking about maybe doing a podcast. We'll see about that. I like doing other people's podcasts. You know, we're having a good time, right, guys?
Damn right. Have you been doing like a podcast little tour, or is the DM inbox blowing up?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are my first of three today, you know, on a Sunday. So it's like, I'm fucking...
Seriously?
Shit. Yeah,
seriously. First of three? What other losers? What, man? No. Are we first? We're first, though, right? You said we're first? Okay, that's...
You're first. Yeah, you're first.
Okay. Yeah, that makes me feel a little bit better. But tell Mark Maron he can suck my dick when you talk to him.
Yeah, no,
Do you have any big dog podcasts hitting you up, or is it just kind of low-level guys like us?
Pretty much all low-level guys,
okay,
like you guys.
Low-level guys and gals.
Yeah, right, guys and gals. Yeah, no, I'm basically just saying yes to anyone who hits me up as long as they don't seem, you know, awful or something.
Yeah, that's inspiring.
You got to watch that. You're going to end up on Jordan Peterson's podcast, and then things are going to change for you.
I'm super psyched to be going on Jordan Peterson's podcast next week and to talk about cancel culture.
Yeah, do you keep up? Keep up in the comedy podcasting world? Is that like a thing that you're into, or is it just are you just a naturally funny fella?
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, I mean, Jake Flores. I really get a kick out of him, have for a long time, and I'm a fan of his. I don't listen to, but I wouldn't even call his podcast comedy podcast, really. I don't know of most kind of comedians that people talk about.
Well, let me tell you something, Max. You're better off because they're not funny. So, you know, just keep doing you, man. Don't let these guys influence you, you know?
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
You know, it's easier to just live on an island.
Yeah, I do think it's kind of good to live on an island sometimes, because an awful lot of people like say the same thing over and over again. Maybe I'm one of those and I just don't know it, but it's nice to not know it, I guess.
Ignorance is bliss.
You've been sober for a decent amount of time now, Max?
15 years as of May 14th.
Shit.
Yeah.
Congrats. So what are your vices? What are your anti-drugs other than social media, of course?
I swim obsessively. I swim close to 2 miles, sometimes over 2 miles a day. And that's like, there was a good amount of quarantine where I wasn't able to do that, but now I'm back with a vengeance.
Damn. So that must have been a little tough on you during quarantine, not able to get your laps in.
Oh, dude. Yeah, it's not good. I mean, I really do need it. My brain needs it. And so, yeah, I'm grateful to be able to do that again. I'm also a cigarette smoker, you know, because like balance is important. So yeah, it's like cigarettes and coffee and swimming, I guess, are my, well, I guess two of those are actual vices and one.
Those are all cool things.
One is an anti-vice. I get into like routines. So like if I'm like used to eating ice cream every day or something, it's like really hard for me to break that. I'm not on one of those right now. So it's like, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind for me a little bit. And I also feel like smoking is terrible and not good and no one should do it. But when your brain has that dopamine access, I've quit smoking before, and that's when that stuff like goes through the roof for me. So what I'm saying is you should start smoking cigarettes and that'll handle your dessert problem.
I'm on it. No, don't worry. I'm trying actually. So don't worry. That's the path I'm on. But what was your, now were you just a general party guy? Cause for me, it was like OxyContin really took the wind out of my sails. Or did you have a particular choice?
It was mainly alcohol for me. I mean, I did everything else, also, but honestly could kind of take or leave the other stuff, at least to the extent that I wasn't like, yeah, I mean, like if it was around, I would do it. You know what I mean?
Sure. You weren't rolling over and doing a line at the hotel.
I mean, I did some of that too, but I don't think I ever paid for it.
Damn, you're like a hot chick. That's cool.
Well, yeah, totally.
You've got a nice set of swimmer shoulders on you. You probably don't have to buy a bag ever.
Yeah, that's right. I just show them my fucking swimmer shoulders. Get all the blood you want. Yeah, no, alcohol was it for me. Alcohol just works so fucking well on me. It's like,
did it run in the family for you, or was it like a surprise? It
ran in the family big time. Not my parents, it skipped them, but both sets of their parents. My dad's mom had like 25 years of sobriety when she died, and my mom's parents were like the kind of alcoholic like I wish I was, where they just drank alcoholically but like never were made sufficiently miserable by it. Like they just like my grandmother into her 90s,
they weren't pussies about it.
Yeah, like they weren't a total pussy about it like I was.
So back in the 90s, you're in LA, you're rocking out. What is your watering hole where you're turning up at?
Probably the block that I frequented most was Franklin, across the street from the Celebrity Scientology Center, La Poubelle and Birds in those places. I was at an awful lot.
Beachwood Betty's.
Yeah, that's right.
Getting Parliament Lights at Gelson's. It's all there.
Oh, dude. Fucking literally, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Love it. You an American Spirit guy now?
Yeah, I am.
Nice pack of yellows.
Every once in a while, I like feel like I want to kind of, you know, try something else, but I'm afraid to because I know I'll like it more. And I have my, you know, I like to delude myself that American Spirits are like less bad for you.
Works on me too.
I think that's everyone that smokes American Spirits has convinced themselves of that.
I know it's silly and can mock it. And also part of me actually really believes it's true. So if the placebo effect is the strongest, you know, idea in medicine, then
yeah,
maybe
it's working. Max, thank you for podcasting with us, King. It's been a pleasure.
No, this has been really fun.
It's been a pleasure, and yeah, I think same. That you know, I'm glad to see this all happening for you, and I hope the new music goes well and the touring and everything, and you know, I hope you get a lot of money from this house you're about to sell, etc.
I appreciate that, you guys. No, this has been really fun. Thanks again for bearing with me. And
well, I only give people with children the excuse to ghost us for recording time. Success and fame has nothing to do with it. Children only.
Also, I thought we were doing a lot of podcasts and you literally have three to do. I don't even know. I mean, I'm proud of you.
One of them is on Twitch. Does that mean I need to like get an app or something? I kind of know what Twitch is, but I've never like done anything on it.
Yes. Yeah. You need to, you need to check it out.
You're going to have to get an app.
Yeah, this would be a great time for you to have one of those new Apple desktops and maybe your favorite color, but unfortunately you're not going to have time for that. So
Yeah. All right. Shit.
I feel like you're days away from having a, you know, a 23-year-old lackey who will kind of do all this stuff for you. I think it's going to be on the horizon for you.
Yeah, man. I need an unpaid intern.
Goddamn right.
So some of them will come out of the woodwork after hearing this show. They might DM you. So get ready.
I hope so. Hit me up.
All right, Max. Thank you very much. Good luck potting.
Thanks, Max.
Have a great rest of your Sunday, buddy.
Thanks so much, guys. You too.
Later, bro. Tonight.